From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made the first week of October when the Finger Lakes Land Trust released a detailed report declaring that the Finger Lakes region stands at a crossroads. What is the right kind of development going forward? Housing and commercial developments are increasing. And is that necessarily a positive thing? Are there harms? The report is entitled Lakes, Farms, and Forests Forever, and it highlights 10 strategies to permanently protect the lands and waters of the region. This hour, we explore the plan in detail. We'll take your questions and comments about the future of development in the Finger Lakes. Let me go ahead and welcome my guests who are joining us from our WEOS studios, 89.5 FM in Geneva. Andrew Zepp is the executive director of the Finger Lakes Land Trust. Andrew, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
And Lisa Kleckner is director of the Finger Lakes Institute at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Lisa, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
We'll make sure Megan Mack and I tweet a link if you want to take a look at the Lakes, Farms, and Forests Forever report. It's 10 conservation strategies for the Finger Lakes region, and we'll put that out on Twitter if you want to check it out and kind of follow along with us. Let me just start with you, Andrew. When it came to putting this together here, you've got a 10-year plan. You want to raise $100 million. You've got these strategies. What's the impetus for this plan now?
Well, the impetus really was our experience of working with local communities for the last 27 years and realizing that on one hand, we're seeing these outbreaks of toxic algae that are threatening the lakes themselves, public drinking water supplies, and a $2 billion tourist economy on one hand. And on the other hand, in areas like Canandaigua, we're seeing suburban development that threatens some of the best farmland in the state and, in fact, the Northeast. So we felt we had to do our homework, talk to all the partners in the region, all the planning agencies and so on, and try to articulate an agenda for the coming decade to channel development to those areas that can support it while making the investments in green infrastructure to ensure the resources that bring people to our region.
Okay. Lisa, you want to make some opening comments before I start working through some of the specifics of the plan and the questions I have?
Sure. Thank you, Evan. So the Finger Lakes Institute has been monitoring the water quality of the Finger Lakes for a number of years. John Halfman, who's a geoscience faculty member, has been really providing some of the baseline data for understanding changes over the years. And these are related to invasive species, but there's also a nutrient issue in the Finger Lakes. And so we have a number of on-the-ground projects, including research, and we work with a number of the same partners that Andy does, but we are trying to provide scientific data to understand more about what are some of the changes that are happening in the Finger Lakes ecosystem.
Okay. We already have a phone call, and before I get to it, one of our listeners wants to ask about sprawl kind of up in our area. I guess I'll start there because I think the caller is going to push us in that direction. This plan includes a number of comments about sprawl, the direction of development. Let me just go ahead and read a couple here. I'm kind of off balance here, so let me just make sure I'm in the right place here. Okay, so away from the shoreline, your report is critical of, quote, poorly sited homes and commercial development, end quote. Define what you mean by poorly sited.
Well, it's the case that as a region, relative to population, we're incredibly land rich. But what happens is that some of the most profitable ways to develop in the short term is to site developments on fragile areas, such as water or steep slopes with views of waters, or arterial roads, such as State Route 332 that goes through Canandaigua, Route 5 and 20. And in the long run, we think that those will not be the best decisions either for perpetuating a $2 billion tourism economy and a $1 billion agricultural economy. And at the same time, there are subtle fiscal impacts to local communities sustaining services to what ultimately is a very low density population. So essentially what we're asking for is a concerted approach to actually implement stated public policies to conserve farmland, our best farmland, and it's try to develop areas that are best suited for it.
Five of the 11 lakes have suffered outbreaks of toxic algae. I'm looking at a picture right now from auburnpub.com, and here it is, a NASA satellite Landsat 8 image that captures an algal bloom visible in light green waves across Owasco Lake. This was taken on September 21st. It's rather remarkable to look at. from space. And when it comes to these outbreaks of potentially toxic algae, can we alight upon a single cause for this?
Evan, I'd like to just update 2016. We now have six lakes.
Cayuga
Lake has also been added. I mean, we just received the latest summary from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. And so when you look at what's happened across the Great Lakes, they're always an interesting model for the Finger Lakes. Nutrients are really one of the main drivers. There's not a single cause, but rising temperatures and nutrient levels are really pointed to as, you know, some of the things that are causing more frequent blooms of blue-green algae across our lakes.
Is private development to blame at all for this?
Evan, one way to look at it is everything, our soils are rich in nutrients to a degree in the Finger Lakes, and after a heavy rain, anything activity that puts more soil in the lakes has an impact. So, for example, if I'm literally digging in my backyard and not taking care of that, that's a part of it. A big parking lot, say in a shopping plaza. But most of the Finger Lakes is rural, and we have such a large agricultural base that to at least some significant extent, it's about doing a better job of controlling runoff of both soil and manure from our farms. Because if you go to the Finger Lakes in say May at planting time, you will have these fields that, because of increasing scale of agriculture, were once 40 acres interrupted by hedgerows that would slow down the water. Well, they're now 200 acres. And at the time of planting, there's not a living organism on that field. And if you get an inch of rain, you can see the sediment going into road ditches and frequently right into the lake. So there are many contributors to this problem, but we do know that we can do a better job and have a bigger impact on agriculture because of the rural nature, as opposed to an area like the city of Rochester.
All right, so we'll stay on the subject of development, and let me grab Sue and Henrietta, who's called the program. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi, Evan. I have a concern for sprawl in Henrietta. I'm a longtime Henrietta resident, and Henrietta has on the table right now a development or a plan to develop over 800 acres of farmland south of the Thruway, which goes against the comprehensive plan. And I'm wondering if Andrew and your visitors have any suggestions for residents in the area.
Thank you, Sue. Go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I'm not familiar with the project, but as a former resident of Monroe County and as a former municipal board member, my comment is that the world is run by those who show up. And in the world of land use planning, particularly in rural and suburban communities, many citizens don't get engaged till late in the game because, one, it's highly technical, a lot of dry meetings on a Tuesday night. But in terms of shaping the future of the community, it's essential that people get involved in both the planning process and then re-engaging, because it's a moving target. It can be changed over time. So there is no silver bullet, but what we do see is that in New York State, line authority is with the local municipality and has a tremendous impact on the landscape, and frequently a very modest number of people are engaged in that process.
There is this idea throughout the region, especially as you move closer to the southern tier, that it's hard to say no to any kind of development. And I understand that. You want to grow a tax base. You want to grow, period. Let me read from your report here, and I want to kind of explore this idea on how to do this in ways that are effective for the region, part of a comprehensive plan. Quoting from the report, quote, "As towns struggle to grow their tax base under difficult economic conditions, commercial development along major arterial roads is typically welcomed. In many cases, however, these town boards lack the technical resources for shaping development proposals that are compatible with the community's traditional character. A locally based guide should be published to help municipal boards adopt best practices and consider alternative construction designs that maintain community character and provide for long-term resiliency in the face of climate change," end quote. There's a lot to kind of unpack there. And I'll start with Andrew, and I'll ask both of you there. When it comes to working with towns, can you start by just sort of empathizing with the idea that it's hard to say no in many ways to development.
Well, absolutely. And I've been in that situation myself. The other issue is these are both technical issues where let's pick your convenience store or your mini storage units, which seem to be proliferating in amazing amounts. You're sitting on a town board. You've had some modest amount of training, but in comes a lawyer and an engineer showing this blueprint and these schematics that you can kind of understand, and you have limitations typically on your technical knowledge. You might have not much staff support, and then you're also might be afraid of being sued, as what are the limits to your authority? And we're not saying in that case you should or shouldn't have mini storage, but if you look at places like Vermont that have design standards, and you'll find a more thoughtful approach of how to site these things. And what we're losing as a region is we're kind of junking up the edges of our beautiful villages, where you can see this, where it's a charming village, but suddenly at the edge of town is a very generic, large gas station and a sprawling mini storage unit. And the question is not should we have those or not, but can't we do it in a way that's better, both in terms of the scenic qualities and character of the region, and in some cases, these are encroaching on the very streams that feed the lake. So that's a big issue region-wide.
I recall a number of years ago being in a couple of smaller towns in the Midwest. One of them had no fast food joints sort of on the main drags of town. And I recall hearing from residents that they've just decided that, you know, throwing a McDonald's in the middle of the character of the main streets of town, they all agreed on was a bad idea. And they've essentially moved to block that kind of development. Another town did have fast food, but it was sort of brick facade, you know, the sort of soft cream-colored brick, and it was certainly not the plastic Niagara Falls-like look that we often see from fast food. And they said, well, you know, it fits in with the character better if this is the kind of standard. And I thought that contrast was interesting. There were two different approaches, but both said we at least have to be more thoughtful. So take me through this. Both of you take me through this here. We're working with local towns and municipalities. As the report says, they often don't often, you know, they have the technical resources and support to come up with these kind of plans. What's going to happen here? If you're successful, what happens next?
Well, two things we're recommending is because many of the smaller towns literally have no staff. They have occasional consultant help, is working with the regional planning and development boards and the counties to provide better access to technical support. The other thing that we think will really be helpful is in a very accessible publication, one that's not dense and technical, to simply show from sites within New York State, hopefully as local as possible, the good, the bad, and what's in between in terms of, take that mini storage or convenience store example. What's the best example we can find of a community doing that, and show it visually, show it in blueprints, show how to do it, all under the same state legal system, and then give that that citizen planning board member better tools that are easier to digest and quicker to use when they're confronted with these proposals.
Okay. Anything you want to add there, Lisa?
Sure. Excuse me. So I think if we look at the Finger Lakes region and we look at where our economic development is, activities currently, agriculture and tourism, and we're looking at obviously the growth of our craft beverage industry as well as, you know, our general food. And so we need to make sure that our environmental protection is commensurate with the amount of funds that are flowing into developing those businesses. And if we do those uncoupled, then I think that we are beginning to hurt our natural resource base and the water quality, which is really the foundation of a lot of reasons why people come to the Finger Lakes in the first place. And so I think, you know, just making sure that, you know, particularly if you look back in, you know, like 2008 and looking at the Department of Environmental Conservation when budgets were slashed significantly for, you know, because of the economic downturn, well, we need to begin to have additional capacity, more capacity at the environmental conservation level, working with the soil and water conservation districts, agricultural environmental management programs to help farmers and other business owners to be cognizant of of the value of the water resources and what are some ways that we can, you know, Andrew mentioned green infrastructure, but what can we do to slow the water down before it reaches our lakes and make sure that new businesses and our current businesses are adhering to guidelines?
844-295-TALK if you want to weigh in, questions and comments on development in the Finger Lakes, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking to Andrew Zepp, Executive Director of the Finger Lakes Land Trust, and Lisa Kleckner, Director of the Finger Lakes Institute at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. We're talking about the Land Trust's new report, and it's called Lakes, Farms, and Forests Forever. It's a conservation agenda with 10 strategies to counter threats and permanently protect the lands and waters of the Finger Lakes region. The goal is $100 million raised for these various efforts and these strategies over the next 10 years. And this is a timely question that comes from Joe, who emails the program and says, Evan, is the presidential election going to impact the money for projects like this? That's a good question, Joe. Lisa, Andrew, how do you feel about that? Tuesday night, did that change anything?
Well, certainly it changed a lot, but regarding funding. Regarding funding at this point for the types of programs that do protect water quality, we don't know the answer to that. But we do have very strong, we are in New York State. Senator Schumer is the minority leader right now. Our New York State is also starting to put a lot more resources into the Environmental Protection Fund and building up staffing again in some of the agencies that will help us run some of these programs from the Albany area. Because, Andrew mentioned this for sure, but we need consistent programs. We need some guidelines that people and some examples of where people can find information and figure out what they can do to address the problems that we know exist. And so, I think we may talk about this a little bit later, but certainly Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, they're very much in touch with a lot of the economic development activities in the Finger Lakes region, and they're aware of how important water quality is to future development in our region, and certainly will be hopefully fantastic advocates for good protection activities.
All right, Andrew, as Executive Director of the Finger Lakes Land Trust, how do you feel about what went down on Tuesday and then whether it impacts your efforts going forward?
Well, we're eagerly awaiting the answer to that question. But as Lisa mentioned, we're not looking solely to the federal government. We're also looking to the state of New York, which has actually been generous to the environment in recent years, as well as the private sector. So we're already in conversations with various federal representatives, but it's really too soon to tell. And as Lisa mentioned, I think one of the important things is that we're talking about a decade-long approach. This isn't going to be quick. We don't see a silver bullet, particularly for addressing the lake water quality issues. And one of the things we need is certainty of funding, because some of these things take years to implement, and there's a big front-end investment that it's not the type of allocation that 1 year's funding will do it. It's a multi-year commitment. And we're talking to all our elected officials right now to craft that strategy. And really what's prompted a much higher degree of attention is the fact that Auburn registered for the first time in state history toxins from toxic algae in treated drinking water. So this is really a big deal and has got everyone's attention at both the local, state, and federal level.
Well, that's great. If I could actually
go ahead, Lisa. Yeah.
And if you look at some of the dollars now that are flowing to the Owasco Lake Watershed Association for some projects on the ground there, funding is coming from a bipartisan team from both the Assembly and the Senate in New York State. So our local officials clearly recognize that these issues are significant for our region and are willing to step up to the plate and help us find resources to begin to explore some of these. But I think this is just the beginning.
Well, on that subject of sort of funding and what you do with the funds, and Andrew and Lisa, I don't have to explain to you guys that if you're going to try to raise $20 million, for example, and some of it from government sources, they probably will want detailed explanations of how you use the money. I'm looking at one of the funding recommendations here and the 10 conservation strategies. Let me just read from this. It's farmland. Where did I go here? Oh, man, there's so many different ones here. And look what I've done there. There we go. $30 million, I'm sorry, provide additional funding to New York State's Farmland Protection Program, targeted specifically to the Finger Lakes region to meet demand from local farmers. That's $30 million, not $20. So $30 million breaks down how? And you don't have to give me a line by line, but you know, is that sort of a general estimate? How is that money going to be used in this sense?
Yeah, and this is what's important in this agenda is it's a mix of current programs where we're talking about an appropriation to an existing program, but in some cases, new programs. In terms of farmland protection, this is an existing state program, and it is a competitive grant process statewide where land conservation groups and local municipalities can apply for funding. And in fact, just last week, the state announced the latest round where we will be receiving a grant in partnership with the town of Canandaigua to protect some of their prime farmland. And this is then used typically by the farmer to reinvest and capitalize their operation, in some cases buying additional land that they rent or creating new products or opportunities for the farm. So it's been a very popular program, and there's just far more demand than there is funding. We've focused it in two areas, kind of areas that are facing suburban pressures like Canandaigua, and then the beautiful Lakeview farms that it's more of a second home pressure. And it's really those two areas that are threatened. They're big portions of the Finger Lakes where the farms are doing fine and there isn't that much development pressure, so this program isn't needed.
And Andrew, give me the snapshot for listeners that if you don't raise the money, if you're not successful with these strategies, 10 years from now, what's the consequence?
Well, they vary. I just focusing on this issue of sprawling development and then the lakes. Starting with the lakes, though, this toxic algae threatens the very drinking water supply. Several years ago, Toledo, Ohio, a city of several hundred thousand, lost its drinking water for several days. So this is a big threat to human health and fiscally. It also means that during these outbreaks, you're advised not to go in the water. So we have a $2 billion tourist economy that's at some risk. So on the algae front, this is really critical to the economic well-being of the area, not just the ecology or the quality of life. It's really essential. On the sprawl issue, I think what you'll see is if we're not successful, essentially a continuing low-density sprawling development that isn't kind of the end of the world, but saps more fiscal resources from towns because it's low density spread out. Traffic will get worse in areas like arterial roads approaching the Rochester area. And we will lose the option of some of the best farmland in the country that may be pretty important down the road if we lose some areas to production, such as the Central Valley of California.
Anything you want to add on that, Lisa, in terms of consequence over the next 10 years?
Well, I guess just to reiterate one more time how important the toxic algae issue is. For tourism, I mean, people come to these lakes, they're coming for winery visits, they're renting houses, they want to recreate where they're staying. And if you see a floating, scum layer that could be potentially toxic, certainly that's going to keep people away. And I'm fortunate enough to have a cottage on the lake, and there's some rental properties nearby, and you can hear the comments from people that are coming from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and other places. We have such a beautiful region, and they are making comments that, wow, I'm not sure I will go swimming in that body of water. And it's pretty shocking to think about, because these lakes they're very large. At least, I'm looking at Cayuga, Seneca Lake. Cayuga Lake and Seneca Lake, some of the larger ones, Canandaigua Lake. I mean, these are big lakes. There's a lot of water in them. And for us to be having toxic algae issues with them is something that we just need to be mindful. We certainly need to heed our warning signs right now and put measures in place right now to reduce nutrient loading to the lakes.
Here's an email from a listener named Jody who says, Evan, your guests talk about water quality and climate change, but Trump has already appointed someone to the EPA who denies climate change is even real. How could this not impact them? That's from Jody. And listen to both of my guests. I really thought we would kind of get past the presidential election in our second hour today. I know it's been on everyone's minds this week, but I understand why Jody and others are going back there. So how would you address Jody's question?
Well, I share Jody's concern. Climate change is a huge issue that's happening now. Just as an example, 2 years ago in the Ithaca area, a localized area received 4 inches of rain in 40 minutes. And what that did was not only blow out the railroad to Ithaca, but moved a tremendous amount of sediment into the lakes. And what our region seems to be seeing from climate change is more variability in weather, the drought this summer, more intense rains. But these rains also are exacerbating the nutrient loading problem because of how extreme they are. So we very much share the concern about our failure to really take meaningful action to address climate change.
Let me get Mike in Honeyway Falls, who's on the phone as well. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My concern is that about a year and a half ago in Honeyway Falls, which is a very nice, quaint village kind of Finger Lakes place that I moved to 5 years ago, had a request to put in a big box coffee shop. I don't know if I can name the actual establishment, but it's a chain, and they wanted a drive-through. And the village doesn't allow drive-throughs except for a few cases where they're for a drugstore drive-through and a bank, which I can understand. And so we had on the books a moratorium or zoning regulation not allowing this. This went on for like a year and a half until the point of, I guess they wore down whoever they needed to wear down in the process. And now we have this, I'll say it, Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru right in the village, which not only violated the codes, it appears, but also did not have a lot of local support. We have two other coffee shops in town, both are locally owned and operated and very successful. So I'm wondering, how do you go about preventing something like this when, in the long run, these large corporations play a waiting game until they find that the resistance is not there anymore, and they go ahead and keep coming back for approval. It's a little frustrating.
Thank you, Mike. Go ahead, guys. You want to handle that?
Well, I think the caller is right that, one, it's not easy, and two, you can always have to pay attention because you might perfect your community as you might perceive it, but then you always have to be aware someone might want to change that. And if you look at communities that are viewed as models of kind of maintaining the character, I think of places like Charleston, South Carolina, if you look back, there's just a monumental amount of effort that people put into getting where they are today, and now still every day, lots of effort to maintain that. So I don't think there is an easy answer.
All right. Well, I'm late for our only break of the hour, and when we come back, we're going to bring in another guest to continue the conversation and kind of broaden it out to discuss farms, wineries, and the future of the Finger Lakes region when it comes to development, the right kinds of development, dealing with toxic algae, and more. You can check it all out in the Finger Lakes Land Trust report and a conservation agenda. It's called Lakes, Farms, and Forests Forever. It highlights 10 strategies to counter the threats that they view can permanently affect the lands and waters of the region. So you can check that out. We'll post that for you, and we'll come right back and continue the conversation here on Connections. And on Friday, on this broadcast, we start with a conversation on Assemblyman Joe Arrigo. He was elected to office on Tuesday. You might recall on this program a couple of weeks ago, he made comments about the city of Rochester, said he wouldn't go to his old neighborhood even in an armored car. We're going to talk about the implications of elected leaders talking about our city in that way. Then in our second hour, we'll talk about a new play at the Downstairs Cabaret Theater, a true story about a Vietnam veteran. It's all Friday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Andrew Zepp, Executive Director of the Finger Lakes Land Trust, and Lisa Kleckner, Director of the Finger Lakes Institute at Hobart and William Smith Colleges, are our guests in our WEOS studios in Geneva, 89.5 FM and Finger Lakes Public Radio. So many of our listeners listening down there, that's where they're joining us from. And on the line with us as well is Marty Masinski. She's a board member for the Finger Lakes Land Trust and owner of Standing Stone Vineyards. And Marty, great to talk to you. How are you?
I'm fine, Evan. How are you doing?
Very good. This is our first conversation on this broadcast this week that's not about the presidential election. And our listeners have still steered it back in that way in some ways. So, Marty, it's only fair for me to ask you if you think the events of Tuesday will impact efforts to raise funds, deal with climate change, deal with regional issues when it comes to development, deal with toxic algae and more. Do you think there will be an impact?
I always remain optimistic, and from the reading I've done and the reactions I'm seeing, I think a lot of people are going to be galvanized to stay really on top of this and recognize the pressure we're under. Again, I might be overly optimistic, but I think a lot of people recognize the threats we face, and that will help us on some level.
I think, Marty, you know, for those who are excited about the results, look, whenever there's a presidential election, the supporters think, you know, it's a panacea. Everything's going to change for the better. It's going to happen close to overnight. And it usually doesn't work out that way. And opponents may think the sky's falling. And for the most part, our government's pretty resistant to the sky falling. So maybe there will be some semblance of stability and status quo, continuation of these issues. We shall see. But for you, Marty, in this report, why don't you pick an issue or two that really stands out to you that you want our listeners to understand really matters for the health of the Finger Lakes region, for the health of the land and the water?
Boy, I would probably defer to Andy to pick priorities. I think as a farm winery, we're just really happy that there is the Finger Lakes Land Trust, the Finger Lakes Institute, working on these issues to really highlight this, bring it to the attention of the people that need to get things done in this case, which is going to be the people who are terrified that the election might mean some significant changes, reduction of funding, reduction of protection. I think that's where we'll see. But again, I'm optimistic that people will be encouraged to work a little harder.
And Marty is the owner of Standing Stone Vineyards, which listeners may or may not know. It's on the eastern side of Seneca Lake and one of the really highly prized and respected wineries in the Finger Lakes region. So for you, Marty, we've been talking about development and what's the right kind of development in the right places. As I noted earlier in the hour, the report indicates some concern that occasionally you see development that is poorly sited, you know, sort of poorly conceived, whether it's commercial development, residential development. You know, you've been on the eastern side of Seneca Lake there at Standing Stone for how long? Remind me how long you've been there.
We bought our property 25 years ago.
25 years ago. Okay. Happy anniversary. And I don't know if it was happy quarter centennial or whatever the term would be.
Right, exactly.
For you, when it comes to development, you not only see a lot more wineries in the region, but we've obviously seen more development of different kinds, commercial properties right on the lake, et cetera. How well do you generally think it is conceived, thought out, planned? I mean, are there sore thumbs out there, or do you think the region is pretty well planned right now?
I think there's a lack of planning, and I think that is a concern. Mm-hmm. As you know, we are in the town of Lodi, and a good part of our area doesn't have planning or zoning. I think there are efforts to think through the process and pull people's thoughts together. But right now, nothing prevents a lot of things from going up without any real thought into them. So I think it is a concern. From the farming perspective, it's a concern that developers can value property and pay prices for property that are way higher than farming prices can justify. And then there's a temptation to lose some of the farms, lose some of our beautiful vineyards and some of our farms, because other uses compel higher prices. And I think it's something we need to give more thought to and work to protect so that historically farmers have been tempted to sell off little chunks here and there when it's a rough year, the tax bill becomes due. And I think with more thought and planning, we could avoid that.
Okay, well, let me ask Marty this and then our guests in our WES studios the same question. What you're describing, Marty, I think is some listeners may hear that and think, well, but isn't that the free market at play? Shouldn't there be some pull for farmers to want to sell part or all, chunks of the land, if they can make good money on it? You know, what's wrong with the free market at play there?
Well, the problem with the free market is it doesn't always consider all of the factors. For instance, in my opinion, Standing Stone Vineyard's very best and highest use is vineyards. We can grow things that nobody else can do. So if we have a planning process and a protection plan in place, whether it's conservation easements, purchase of development rights, or other programs that can support farms that are well suited to being premium farms, that reduces the temptation. It can help provide funding. So it's not just having planning and zoning, it's combining that with funding sources to sort of take the place of the free market and help compensate the farmer.
Andy, how do you feel about that same kind of question? Go ahead. Andrew, are you there? I'm not here. All of a sudden, I'm not here in our WS studios in Geneva. There they are. Andrew, go ahead if you can hear me.
Sure. As you can see from our agenda, it's very much based on the free market, where we're not proposing regulations. Mm-hmm. We're proposing consensus-based payments and so on. So I think that the free market with guidelines that protect these other factors, such as water quality, is central to our beliefs. And the other issue, though, to inject is this notion of what's right for the short term as well as what's right for the long term. So to take into account the benefit of future generations so that while it's free market based, we don't essentially mine out our children's inheritance.
Okay. Well, listeners, if you want to weigh in on what you're hearing, I'll take a few more of your emails or phone calls throughout the hour if you want to do that. And if you want to read the report here, Lakes, Farms, and Forests Forever, we're posting it on our Twitter feeds. MMAC Media is Megan Mack, the producer of this broadcast, and I'm on Twitter at Evan Dawson if you want to check it out. It's actually really colorfully laid out and very visual, so it's a piece of cake to follow through and understand. Andrew Zepp, executive director of the Finger Lakes Land Trust, we've been working through some of the specifics. What have we missed so far?
Well, we've talked a lot about farming in the lakes, and I did want to point out that at the south end of our lakes are just some stunning landscapes of wooded hills and gorges and natural areas and the Finger Lakes Trail. And the Land Trust has been working with partners for years to protect key parcels in these areas. And at the south end of Canandaigua Lake, for example, or Skinny Atlas are just stunning landscapes. And we're seeking additional funding to not only complete the protection of networks of conservation land that are important to the health of the lake, but also provide tremendous outdoor recreational opportunities. And we're also seeking funds to take some existing state lands that have very limited public access and put in simple improvements such as parking areas and signage so that someone from Rochester could easily find and utilize these areas. So that's also part of the plan.
Lisa, you want to respond to that as well?
I guess, you know, I'll take us, you know, kind of looking at blue-green algae across the region. Mm-hmm. And while it's not explicitly laid out in what I'm going to talk about in the report, I mean, certainly it's an issue. And I think one of the really important things to know about New York State is we have one of the better systems in place to detect when harmful algal bloom events occur. And a lot of, while there's a very dedicated staff in Albany, there's now two full-time staff people, and actually the staff increased by 100% last year. So we now have a full-time coordinator there, but they've been able to secure federal dollars to help us understand more about the occurrences of harmful algal blooms across the state as a whole. But in the Finger Lakes in particular, there have been a number of watershed groups that have provided a lot of citizen science and volunteer efforts to help us identify when blooms might be occurring. And there's now a screening process that's in place so that we can, you know, basically get data on the ground very quickly, screen samples, and then send them to either colleges or to Albany to screen for toxin levels. So I think, you know, the scientific process has been very much buoyed by the interests of the citizens in the region and the watershed groups that have really been extremely proactive on these events.
Let me read a couple of emails from listeners that are similar in tone. Mark writes to the program and says, what about all of the nutrients, fertilizer from farms and wineries? And Kareem writes to the program and says, Evan, does the plan address private homes, sewer septic systems, fertilizer use, and from these areas in addition to farmland? So some similarities there. I'll start with Andrew Zepp and let you all respond to some of those questions there.
Yeah, and two things. One is that in the plan, we particularly focus on two strategies. One is to secure perpetual conservation easements on farmland immediately next to these streams that people agree is not the areas that should be farmed. They're too fragile. So to start to retire some of those sensitive areas. But then in addition, we have a landscape that 100 years people have been plumbing it. Because of wet soils, farmers put in what are called tile drains to make it drain quicker in the spring. And these tie into highway ditches that go straight to the lake. So we've spent 100 years making it as quick as possible to get that water and nutrients in the lake. What we need to do now is start to restore and construct strategically located wetlands that can actually act as a silt trap. So we're settling out those nutrients before they get to the lake. And this involves issues of design, where should these go, real estate, who owns them, how can we acquire them. So it would be a substantial undertaking. And I will mention that every homeowner has a role to play. And the report, we did not elevate that as a top priority simply because outside of Ithaca and Canandaigua, most of the Finger Lakes is rural. And at the north end, a lot of the communities actually drain away from the lake. So it is an issue for Lake Ontario, say, but we did focus on solutions relative to agriculture simply because of the character of the landscape and the lack of large urban areas.
Okay, Marty Masinski from Standing Stone Vineyards, anything to add there?
I think it's just continued working with the farms, and I think at least the wineries, but I think also all the farms are interested in working with all kinds of organizations that help us figure out how to do things better. And sometimes it comes in the form of grants that helps us build little projects that better manage the water. Sometimes it's just information on what to do and when. But I think there's a pretty concerted effort by several different organizations to work with the wineries and the farms, and I think it works well. We work well together. As I explained to everybody, we drink the water too, and I think we keep that in mind all the time.
Mike in Rochester on the phone is next up. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. I don't call very often, but recently I became aware that landowners along the Finger Lakes, the cottage owners, in order to inhibit weed growth, are using copper sulfate and other chemicals to knock down the weed growth. And I think that may be having an effect. So they're knocking down the stemmed weed growth, and maybe they're trading it for algae growth. I think it's a big issue. I was shocked when I started talking to some landowners how I think just it's very common along a lot of the lakes, and it may be contributing.
Okay, Andrew and Lisa, go ahead.
So I think one of the main benefits of a watershed association is to provide education to cottage owners and renters about best practices and what they should and shouldn't be doing. And certainly you hear every once in a while of a person that's putting something in the water that they shouldn't be doing. But having, again, spent a little time on them, there's a lot of peer pressure from your neighbors about what you do on your own land. And I think that people are looking for information and trying to do the right thing. And, people will talk to the authorities to basically report on people when they're not doing things properly. I think to one of the previous questions, this does apply to septic tanks and maintenance. And one of the things that Canandaigua Lake has been very proactive on is having an inspection program and digitizing a lot of the records so we know exactly the status of septic tanks and when they were last inspected or pumped. And we're very aware of point sources as well, wastewater treatment plants. Phosphorus can enter a lake from many sources. The key is how, available that phosphorus is to organisms and how they grow. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. But certainly we are mindful of other sources besides, particulates coming from farmland as well.
Let me read an email from a listener named Robert who writes, Evan, New York State blocked fracking. And that sounds like they're blocking jobs. This plan sounds like it is also anti-jobs and development. So Robert is hearing this and he's thinking what you really want to do is just block development, block job creation. And I know you'll have a lot to respond there. I'll start with Andrew. Go ahead.
Well, I think you really have to open up the plan and read it because this is absolutely the opposite. The way I look at it is I live in Ithaca And I know that Cornell, or for that matter, Corning Inc., is out there recruiting talent from, you know, they're competing with the Silicon Valley or Boston, and they try to sell our region. And as you sell our region, you have high property taxes, and which is a concern of many people, including myself, a homeowner. We have high energy costs. We have high labor. We have all these issues. But what really sells our region is the wonderful quality of life we have from these lakes and landscapes. And what this is about is actually retaining and creating more jobs by investing in that landscape, that kind of green infrastructure that supports not only agriculture and tourism, but also makes it compelling in an increasingly mobile world to say, hey, I want to live up there rather than Vermont or Colorado or any number of places. So I would say look at the plan, and this is definitely about keeping the region competitive and making it more so.
Okay, Marnie Masinski, what would you say to Robert?
I would echo what Andy said, and I think development doesn't always mean willy-nilly development in every direction, but planned development means we look at what are the strengths of our area, how do we protect them so they can continue to develop and grow, which is going to build not only the character of the whole region, but it's also going to create jobs.
When it comes to the kind of development that Robert, who emailed, was talking about, you know, again, I hate to keep going back to the results of Tuesday's elections, but we now have a president who is very pro-fracking. We have a governor who's not, obviously, and I'm not sure it reopens the issue in the region just yet here, but I think you're going to see much more of an emphasis on fossil fuels, on fracking. And Andrew, is that a concern going forward when it comes to development? I mean, what are your thoughts on fracking in the region and whether it's kind of a done deal or at least settled for a while?
Well, I think whether it's, we look, the land trust is in this looking at periods of time beyond our lifetimes. So I have no illusion that, forget the next 4 years, look 20, 30 years at a time of maximum global economy revving the engine and pressure for more energy resources. This will be revisited, I'm sure, more than once in the future. And I guess what we're saying is, given all the ways to produce energy and the technologies that exist today, so that's one thing, is it's a moving target. We can't predict what the technology will be in 20 years. But with what we know today at this moment in time, no, we don't think that fracking is the best for the health of the Finger Lakes or the regional economy. I don't think we can speculate what the answer is 20 years from now, though I do hope it's a moot point because renewable energy is cost effective and we're using that. But I think it is an open question.
All right, just real briefly, Marty Masinski, for people like Robert who did want to see fracking, do you believe as a winery owner, can fracking and the wine industry exist side by side in the Finger Lakes?
I don't think so. And I don't think, I think Andy makes the great point that right now the cost, it's kind of gone away. And I think the cost to come back in, again, when we're developing our wineries, we're developing our vineyards, I think right now to buy the land for fracking is not going to be cost effective. And so I think let's develop what we have and develop it to something that are long-term jobs and long-term businesses. And as you know, some of the finest wineries in the world are multi-generational businesses, and we're starting to see that happen here in the Finger Lakes with tremendous growth and expansion of jobs beyond the families themselves.
Let me squeeze in one more listener question. An email from Jan, who says she is a 40-year resident in the gorgeous Finger Lakes. Jan writes, love the show, Evan, and also kudos to the Finger Lakes Land Trust Seneca County website. Very informative and visually lovely pictures of our gorgeous Seneca County. And she says, my question is, within your extensive water and ground sample testing programs, have you noticed any or do you anticipate any potential adverse effects on our natural resources from the huge landfills in our area, e.g. the Seneca Meadows landfill in Seneca Falls, Waterloo, and the Casella Waste Landfill in Stanley, among others? Again, that's from Jan. Andrew and Lisa?
So a lot of the leachate from the landfills are treated at wastewater treatment plants, but those wastewater treatment plants are not designed to remove the chemical milieu, if you will, that exists in leachate. So I think that's a very important question for us all to think about. We do not monitor for those contaminants in water. The wastewater treatment plants were not designed to take care of those in the first place. And so then if we are, you know, if leachate is brought to the Geneva wastewater treatment plant and it goes into Seneca Lake, it goes from Seneca Lake into the canal, touches Cayuga Lake, goes up in the Seneca River and ends up in Lake Ontario. And so these contaminants are very much a concern. And in my opinion, you know, the landfill question goes hand in hand with, you know, the water quality issue. And really, is it, do we want to have economic development based on the siting of landfills in our beautiful region? And I, you know, I don't think that that's the best use of the resources that we have here and our precious water.
Let me read this tweet from McKay to kind of end the hour. She says, the panelist making the point about the lack of technical skill or staff with planning in rural communities was a great point for context. Building context like this helps to understand what our rural communities deal with in our decision making. So thank you. And a thumbs up from McKay. That's just part of the strategies and the plan, trying to get more of that technical expertise and planning background help for towns and municipalities throughout the Finger Lakes region, whether it's towns on the water or towns not on the water, but making decisions on what's the right kind of development there. So much wrapped into this report. It's called Lakes, Farms, and Forests Forever, the conservation agenda put forward by the Finger Lakes Land Trust. You can check that out. It's easy to find, and we've linked to it on our Twitter account. It looks great. It actually reads really easily, which is not always easy for documents like this, Andrew Sepp. So congratulations to you on that, and thank you for taking the time for this program.
Thanks for having us.
Andrew Zepps, Executive Director of the Finger Lakes Land Trust. Lisa Kleckner, thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
The Director of the Finger Lakes Institute at Hobart and William Smith Colleges. And Marty Masinski, who should be taking a long nap after harvest, took the time to join us from Standing Stone. Hope you had a great harvest, by the way, and thanks for joining the program.
We did.
Marty Masinski from Standing Stone Vineyards on Seneca Lake. And thanks for listening today. Rob Braden's the engineer of this broadcast, and Megan Mack is the outstanding producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you Friday on member-supported public radio.